Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Cisco Analyst Relations Speaker Series conference call. My name is Solomon, and I'll be your coordinator for today. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. We will be facilitating a question-and-answer session towards the end of this conference. If at any time during the call you require assistance, please press star followed by zero, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I would now like to turn the presentation over to your host for today's call, Mrs. Amy Poon. Please proceed, ma'am.
Greetings, everyone. This is Amy Poon in the Analyst Relations Group, and I'd like to welcome you to our speaker series, Teleconference on Cisco Services. The format of the teleconference will be approximately 40 minutes of presentation, followed by a Q&A session. The presentation will focus on these areas: Cisco Services' role in enabling network as the platform, accelerating technology adoption to drive business agility, service-led interaction and total customer experience, and finally, end-to-end service case studies. Today's presenters are David Rubio, Vice President of Cisco Services in Asia Pacific, and Chris Heckscher, Managing Director of Advanced Services in Asia Pacific. David is Vice President of Cisco Services, and his 12 years at Cisco across multiple functions and geographies make him a truly global manager with a well-rounded background required to drive the company's next-generation leadership in products and services. Over the last 4 years in Asia, David has led teams that redefined the company's engagement with customers through leadership in general management, marketing, and sales strategies in some of the Cisco's highest growth markets. Chris is a managing director of advanced services for Cisco Services. Based in Hong Kong, Chris has served the Asia Pacific region in various capacities for over 7 years. He is currently responsible for a team of solution architects, consultants, and subject matter experts focused on planning, designing, and delivering innovative solutions to enable competitive advantage and business success for Cisco's largest service provider and enterprise customers. After the presentation, we will have the questions and answer period. The operator will poll the participants on the phone line for any questions you may have. We will also use this time to address questions we have received in advance of the call. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to David.
Thank you, Amy. Good morning. I would like to start by thanking everyone for taking the time to join this call. During today, what I would like to do is start by giving an overview on how we view the service industry evolving and how we view the role of Cisco within that evolution. If you go to slide two, basically what we're seeing is that it's very important for the service industry to get closer to its customers. That's the way different companies differentiate themselves. This is very important because at the end what we see is that customers really see a premium on personalized services. So it's all about making services relevant and personalized for customers. And there's several examples in the industry on how this is happening. If you think, for example, on how the health industry is evolving, right now it's evolving in a way in which, thanks to technology, we can diagnose remotely what are the customer's symptoms, needs, correlate that with patterns, and send that information back to a hospital, and then send advice back to the end users. You could also think on things like how the automobile industry is evolving and things like what Mini is doing, which is basically allowing customers to personalize their own car through the website and track how the car is being manufactured through the different processes. And at the end of the day, what needs to happen in order for this to be successful is that different partners from different industries need to come together to offer this personalized end-to-end service. And that is where we really see the role of Cisco enabling this technology to bring these partners together on a common platform and enable to provide these personalized services. If you move to the next slide and you think on how Cisco Services is evolving in itself, basically what we see is that the industry is moving from product to technology to solutions as we move from infrastructure build out to more application build out and being able to provide applications to end users. And what we typically see is vendors following one of two approaches, either going down the customer relevance axis and trying to become system integrators and outsourcers, or just trying to provide service uniqueness and being able to provide applications that address this uniqueness. We think that within Cisco, we are uniquely positioned to address both. And we want to do this through our web-enabled self-support, which we'll talk about later, and our technology practices with lifecycle services, with which Chris Hexter will be addressing also. So at the end of the day, we think that within Cisco, if you go to slide number 4, we can provide the thought leadership on our service from a services delivery perspective, and that we can do that through a full coverage services model, which I will talk about later, and with that be able to provide a next generation customer experience. In order to do both of those things, it's very important to have the right infrastructure, and I want to talk a little bit also about what we're doing from an investment perspective in this theater in Asia Pacific to make this possible and relevant to our customers. If you go to slide number 5, this speaks about our services portfolio and how we go to market. So basically, within Cisco, we have three main services that we offer to the market, being technical services, advanced services, and advisory services. Each of these services cover different parts of the customer requirements. The way we look at this is from what we call a lifecycle services approach, which are the different phases in which through which a customer goes through as they implement their IT strategy. And those phases are prepare, plan, design, implement, optimize, and operate. What we've seen over time is how, especially in Asia Pacific, how customers are moving away from thinking on services only as optimize and operate and warranty services to kind of value the value add that services can bring on the other different phases, and how they seem that how by having the right preparation, planning, and design, they can really maximize the return on investment that they're making on the technology. You could also see how we have different strategies for different verticals in this slide. So basically, the way we look at the market is by four different verticals. One is the consumer market, the other one is the commercial market, the other one will be service provider and enterprise. We think that the different verticals have different needs. So if you look, for example, at consumer, what we see is that with consumer, for the consumer market, basically what they're asking from us is more of a remote web-enabled services, and that they're still pretty much focused on the optimized operate phase of what we can offer. If you look, for example, at enterprise on the other end of the spectrum or service provider, you can see how they are really looking at services with the over the complete life cycle, and how they are asking Cisco to get engaged over the complete life cycle. And then how they're also looking at our offers from our three services type, being technical services, advanced services, and advisory services. The slide also talks to how what each different services type is addressing. So technical services will be mainly focused on operate and optimize. Advanced services will be focused on design and implement. And advisory services will be focused more on the prepare and plan side of the lifecycle services. So with this slide, we tend to explain our service portfolio, how it fits with the lifecycle services, and what are the main focus areas in each of the different verticals that we cover. We can also see how we move up the value chain from technical services to advanced services to advisory services. The on-site component becomes more relevant for customers. So for the operate and optimize phase, Cisco has traditionally been leading the industry with our web-enabled support model, but we see as how we speak about advisory or advanced, the on-site component becomes really critical in how we are investing on providing that part of the services delivery to our customers. If you go to the next slide, slide number six, I'd like to spend some time really focused on what we call next generation customer experience and link that back to what we said at the beginning in terms of what are the requirements that we see from a service industry and how the service industry is evolving. And basically, this is the next generation of services that we're going to be putting into the market and are putting into the market. And it's all about making sure that we are able to capture in a relevant way customer information. So what we're doing here is putting a device in the customer network and using this device as a probe to be able to capture information from the customer, pretty much in line to what we described on the first slide on things like what the medical industry is doing or what the car industry is doing with the personalized design. So we put a probe in the customer network. With this probe, we're able to capture information on traffic patterns from the customer, and we're able to send this information back to our own databases and correlate that information with our own intellectual property. That enables us to do two things. On one side, it really facilitates the contract management side of what we're doing. So we are able to understand pretty much what is the configuration of the network, and we're able to use that to, in a very efficient way, be able to provide customers with accurate contracts, accurate renewals. On the other side, we're able to really understand the patterns of traffic within the customer network, and we're able to correlate those traffic patterns with our own intellectual property on traffic patterns on similar networks and use that information to detect possible bottlenecks, possible performance issues before they occur. We send that information back to our partners, and our partners are able to use that information to proactively go to the end user and provide him with advice on how to avoid network problems before they occur or recommend network upgrades. So that is very powerful. And the third and last angle of it is that we're able to understand which features of our products are being utilized mostly by our customers, and we're able to use that information to feed that back to our business units and provide them with information that they use on making our products more relevant, making sure that we invest our engineering time on the features that customers are using. Sometimes we've seen how we launch a product with 20 features and maybe the customers are only using one or two. So as we launch the next generation, we focus on enhancing the part of the product that they're using. So this is the way we see our services evolving. We have launched a couple of pilots using this technology, and we'll be making major announcements moving forward around this. We already have shared with the press some of this. The first announcement that we're going to be making is around an offer specifically geared for the commercial market, which will be SmartCare. Right now we're running some pilots in Asia-Pacific around this, and with a great degree of success with our partners and end users. But we expect that this technology will be embedded into all our services portfolio as we move forward. We're starting with commercial for a couple of reasons in SmartCare. One is that we think that the commercial has a big potential for growth within Cisco. We're seeing how the commercial segment is really becoming a very avid adopter of technology. And second, we think that in order for us to be able to have the scale to reach this commercial market, being able to have this kind of customer intimacy relationship through a web-enabled process is key for our success and our customer success. If we move to the next slide, slide 7, I'd like to end up by sharing some of the investments that we're making in Asia Pacific to provide the level of services that our customers and partners are asking for. So, as our journey in Asia Pacific has been quite extensive for many years, but right now we're pretty confident on the levels of investments that we made. And first, on the quality of our support engineers. So more than 50% of our customer support engineers are what we call CCI certified, which means Cisco Certified Internet Working Engineer. And as you all know, that is a standard which is pretty much recognized in the industry, and we want to make sure that our engineers are up to that standard. We also have done big amount of investments in labs, especially around the IP Next Generation labs for our top-end customers, top service providers, top enterprises. We've invested more than $200 million. And this is critical because as they really think on deploying this new generation of networks, they want to make sure that they can go through a proof of concept together with us. Big investment also in tools, more than $30 million. And these tools are things that enable us to do things like the smart care remote management that we talked about, remote diagnosis, and also lots of we also use lots of the same tools that we use on our engineering department to create new products. We use those same tools to support our customers being able to model traffic patterns and make sure that we simulate different environments to validate their designs. And we also have a 24/7 local support remote technical assistance center within Asia Pacific with Chinese local language support and Korean local language support. We also invested very heavily on our hardware replacement capabilities. So basically, as we all know, right, sometimes there's problem in an equipment and the customer might need to get that equipment replaced. Now we have more than 100 different depots across the theater by which we can send the new hardware to our customers in a two-hour response time. And the last part of the investment which we're making and also shows our commitment to the theater is that in the past we used to have most of our repair facilities back in the U.S. So that meant that every time there was a defective product, we would send it back to the U.S. for repair. Now we're establishing worldwide repair facilities in both China today and also thinking on establishing that in India so that we can leverage these countries to repair products not only from China and India but potentially from around the world. I'd like to end with slide number 8 before I pass it to my colleague, talking also a little bit about how our services are recognized in the industry. And as you can read here, and I'm not going to go through each single one of them, but we're constantly getting awarded in terms of the quality of the services we provide to our end users, both on the technical services, which is more the operate and optimize side, as well as at the advanced services side, which is more the implementation side. As you can see, many different awards, both global and Asia-Pacific, which I think speaks to the quality of our support and to the reach of our investments. So with that, I would like to pass it to Chris, and I think we have some time for questions at the end. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Good morning. So starting on slide 11, the CIO job or the IT department's role within our customers has never been as challenging, nor has it carried as much risk as it does today. The expectations of consumers and business users are only increasing at an unprecedented rate. And to compound that challenge, you know, the networks that are in place today, be it at service providers or at enterprise customers, were built to support one type of application. Such as telephony or video or LAN data traffic. In the case of television, several networks were created, one based on cable, one based on satellite, and perhaps even one based on terrestrial wireless. Then devices customized to consume that application were produced, a telephone or a television set, for example. This model, the model of the past, is vertical. Specific content, specific application, specific networks, and specific devices. But today, consumers watch televisions on their PCs. They watch television on their mobile devices. They chat with friends on their PCs. They chat with friends on their mobile phones and use all different types of devices for gaming. The evolving model is one where applications, networks, devices are interlinked in a much more flexible way. Next generation IP networks are enabling compatible and interoperable devices and applications. This consolidation, which will accelerate greatly over the coming years, has deep lasting implications for the way that people communicate, collaborate, work, and play. Early adopters have already taken the lead by linking together such devices as their PCs, TVs, and music and digital music players. And from here, it's up to technology companies like Cisco to offer ways to provide easy interoperability among these now disparate capabilities and applications and bring them together onto one seamless and integrated network. So moving on to slide 12, David talked a little bit earlier around Cisco's lifecycle approach to providing advanced services and networking solutions to customers. First, you start with the prepare phase, which is really around how do we help the customers make sound financial decisions? How do we help them establish the financial justification through a business case? This could be for a service provider rolling out a new service such as IPTV or a new gaming service for a mobile provider. For an enterprise, it could be helping them understand the implications for rolling out a new branch network to enter a new market. So it also establishes the financial justification through a business case, and so we have consultants that work hand-in-hand with customers to help them achieve that. As we move over to the plan stage, this is really around setting the stage for a smooth and on-time deployment. You know, assessing the network, assessing the sites, and starting to develop a project management plan. What customers always are asking us for is, you know, how can you assure me that the network's going to work as it's been designed to? Is it going to meet all my requirements? Is it going to meet today's requirements? Is it going to meet future requirements? That's really where we set the stage in the plan phase. As we move over to the design phase, this is about reducing risk and rework and ensuring a successful implementation. This is where we develop a comprehensive, detailed design that meets the business and the technical requirements that the customer might have. In the implementation phase, this is really around speed and return on investment. How do we implement this solution without disruption or vulnerability? How do we integrate devices and migrate devices and services without disrupting the existing network or creating points of vulnerability? And then as we move into the operate and the optimize phase, the operational services is really around maintaining high availability and reducing expenses. Today's networks can't go down. If you have disruptions on a IPTV network such as now broadband in Hong Kong, that's going to have a disruptive impact on the user experience. Same in a bank's trading floor. If there's a glitch or a hiccup in the network, that potentially has a significant amount of business impact on their operations. So operate is also around maintaining the network health through the day-to-day operations and how we can share best practices that we've gleaned through global engagements to help the customer better support and operate that network. And then finally, in the optimize phase, this is really around fine-tuning the network, improving performance, availability, capacity, and security, and achieving operational excellence through ongoing improvement of the system performance and functionality. Today's networks don't stand still. You've got additional BlackBerry devices and mobile computer devices that come onto the network. There has to be a constant and vigilant effort to maintain and optimize that network to ensure that it's fine-tuned to support the business needs. So this is a little bit of how we do this, generally with our partners to help support the customer and to drive assurance and customer success. Moving on to slide 13. So how do we do this, and where is the value creation? It's really in our people, our tools, and our process. We've got expert network designs that we've gleaned through thousands of engagements with real-world experience, whether that's turning up a new network at a just-built airport, where we've got dozens of examples around the globe of how we've implemented integrated networks at airports, for instance. It's also around core expertise in the IT strategy and consultative services. David spoke a little bit about the advisory services that we've been investing in here and in Asia Pacific and around the world. That's really around driving the architectural discussion with the customer on how do you architect this network, not just for today's requirements, but also about the requirements that they foresee that they will need from their business users and consumers 2 to 3 years out. And then finally, how do we transfer that knowledge and these worldwide best practices to our customers so that they can continue to optimize and maintain that network? And again, as David mentioned, we've made significant investments over the last 1 to 2 years in people, tools, process. We're a leader in patents and standards contributions. We've got a significant amount of expertise in terms of senior architects and project management to support the customer as we go through the lifecycle services phase. Moving on to slide 14. Talking a little bit about more about the investments that we're making here in Asia Pacific. Really, five key areas are big bets where we find customers are really looking to Cisco for advice. It's really the service provider market, and I'll talk a little bit in a minute about some example engagements of where we've worked closely with service providers in providing lifecycle services. Architectural expertise. This is something that we are seeing across each vertical, service provider, enterprise. We're seeing it from the public sector, where customers are coming to us asking us to help them figure out how to architect these new networks with the flexibility and the integration to support their future needs over the next few years. Data center security and unified communications are also areas that we see significant high growth in Asia Pacific and around the globe. So these are the centers of excellence that we are now building in Asia Pacific and continuing to build that level of expertise and skill within our advanced services organization. As I move to slide 15, I want to transition into give you a brief overview of a couple engagements that we've done, one in the service provider sector and one in the financial services vertical. This first one was really around building a business plan and business case for IPTV, an IPTV portal service at a North Asia service provider. Customer was really looking to become a leader in video on demand services. They had in the early days they had 30,000 subs in the first 2 weeks, and their concerns were, can my network scale? Can my network support these new types of services and the demands that the IPTV service and what their customers were asking for? They came to Cisco to really help them not just understand the technology architecture and understand what was their network ready, but also they really wanted our help and expertise around the business architecture. How do we create a differentiated service from some of our competitors? How do we have platform scalability and readiness? This was done at a board level as well as all the way through the CIO organization, CTO organization, and business development. And that was really key to our success, was making sure that we linked the business and the technology architecture through the technology teams, but also at the board level to make the business case fly with the board of directors. The solution was really built around a video readiness assessment. It was one of the first that we had ever delivered, which was really around, how do we build this network so that it's flexible, it's scalable, you can roll out services easy, it's got the agility to bring new services onto the network and scale into the hundreds of thousands of subscribers. And the recommendations actually resulted in a significant amount of Cisco CRS One Core routers with migration to wideband CMTS as well. And the business value for the customer was also around the business case that we helped them build. So it wasn't really just the technology piece. It was also the business consulting piece that we were working hand-in-hand with them on to really put together an integrated business case up to their board level for approval. Moving on to slide 16, this is an example of a financial services customer of ours in China. As you all know, many of the banks in China have recently gone IPO. They have been very successful. Their market caps are now quite, you know, some of the largest around the globe. And with the advent of WTO 5 or 6 years ago, the foreign competition coming to the Chinese market is only increasing. So a lot of our financial services customers are coming to us looking for worldwide best practices. How do we help them become more competitive so that when foreign competition comes into the market, they can compete effectively? In this case, this customer was really looking to consolidate tens of data centers that they had around the country into two. It's a very complicated solution, very complicated engagement, very high expectation from the customer, lots of complexity with multiple partners. They came to Cisco really for the assurance that it would all work and it would all come together, and also to manage a lot of the different subcontracting partners to come together to provide success and assurance to them. We leveraged not only our China resources and Asia-Pac resources, but also resources that we had in other parts of the world, in the U.S. And Europe, to really get the best type of support and capability and skills to the table to manage this this engagement. And again, in the end, the business value was really a world-class data center architecture that was flexible and scalable enough that could result in that could help them support the numerous different services and businesses that they will scale and grow into over the coming years. Something that we're quite proud of. And obviously, one other point I wanted to mention is really around the knowledge transfer. What a lot of our customers in Asia are looking for is, you know, help me understand what the worldwide best practices are in operational excellence, process, and supporting the network and supporting the data center. And that's something that we can provide given the significant amount of experience that we have around the globe. So moving on to slide 17, you know, really at my final slide, really is around, you know, four big pillars that our customers are looking for. They're looking for lower total cost of network ownership, increased network availability, improved business agility. The questions and the expectations that our customers are getting from their end users, whether it's the business owners, it could be the investment bankers on the banking side, it could be consumers on the service provider side. They want to be able to roll out services, roll out branches very, very quickly, because that is what's going to give them competitive advantage, as well as speed access to applications, which will also help them scale in a reliable way. So in terms of the lowering the total cost of ownership, this is really around identifying and validating technology requirements, ensuring a successful implementation, and also along the way, you know, reducing the operating expenses by improving the efficiency of the operation process and tools. And this is really something that we bring to the table, again, through the experience that we've gleaned through many engagements around the globe. In terms of increasing network availability, this is really around a sound design and architecture. This is up in the plan and prepare phase. It's about, you know, assessing the network security state and ability to accommodate the services and applications that are going to be riding the network, specifying the correct set of hardware and software to keep it operational and current. Also improving the staff skills. You know, how do we help them help themselves in keeping their network up and keeping it available? And then also providing them the tools to proactively monitor the system and assess availability trends and alerts. I talked a little bit earlier around improving business agility. This is really how lifecycle services helps customers establish business requirements and align them to the technology strategies. The technology strategies aligned to the business requirements. It's really about integrating technical requirements and business goals into a detailed design and demonstrating that the network is functioning as specified. You know, expert install and configure, and also integrate all the different system components, so that, and also lastly, continually enhancing performance. And then lastly, speeding access to applications and services. This is really around improving service delivery efficiency and effectiveness by increasing availability, resource capacity, and performance, and then also managing and resolving problems affecting the system before they actually happen, or the proactive nature of optimization. So with that, you know, I think in summary, I'd just like to say that, you know, services is key to Cisco's overall strategy and something that we're investing heavily in at a global level as well as in Asia Pacific. And it's really key to ensuring our customer success. So with that, I will turn it back to Amy for the next stage.
Great. Thank you very much, David and Chris, for a very informative presentation. At this time, we are ready for the Q&A portion of the conference call. So, operator, can you at this time please open the floor?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star followed by two. Press star one to begin. Please stand by while we structure a list. Our first question comes from the line of Philip Carter with IDC. Please proceed.
Hi, David. Thanks very much for the presentation. I'd just like to know, as you go to markets, mainly in the service provider and enterprise segments, to what extent the services organization is actually leading the customer engagement, or is it still pretty much product-led?
Hi, Philip. Thanks for the question. Thanks for also taking the time. You know, to answer your question, it varies customer by customer. Having said that, we're seeing how things are evolving in terms of being more services-led than product-led. And basically, the way I look at it, it's mainly dependent on the state at which the customer is at. So for customers that are still kind of in the phase in which they're just deploying infrastructure, it usually tends to be more of a product-led type of approach. But for customers that are more mature in that cycle and are thinking more on deploying services for their own end users or applications for their own end users, that's when it tends to be more services-led. And I think Chris alluded to a very clear example for us, which is for the banking industry in China. We've seen how, you know, as the regulation comes into the banking industry, some of these banks feel that they need to compete in a more agile way, offering new proposals to their end users, and that's when they come to us and ask for more of a services-led engagement, asking us to help them scale the data center and in a more flexible and scalable way. So that could be a good example of where we see services-led. If you think on service providers, same type of approach, right? Some service providers are still more in the infrastructure deployment cycle, but other ones are really thinking on services to the end users, whether it's managed services, hosted services, and in that type of situation, they're really asking us to engage from a services-led perspective. You know, things like what Singapore is doing with IN 2015 will be a clear example of a customer that is looking at leading with services. And but we see this all across all verticals. So we've even been engaged with some government institutions in places like New Zealand, in which they're also asking us to do a services-led interaction. And one more vertical in which we're seeing a very quick transformation, it could be the real estate vertical. We're seeing how now lots of the real estate developers are looking at offering what they call a connected building as a way to differentiate their offer from other ones. Here we have even a public reference that a public case study, which is Quanta Computers, and how last year they were building their headquarter building in Taiwan, they really engaged Cisco on helping them re-engineer all their processes to have an intelligent building.
Okay. Thanks. Just a follow-up question there. So are the salespeople actually incentivized to sell services, or is it are they entirely incentivized on the product side?
we have two sales organizations, services and product, but to answer your question, the product people are incentivized on selling services. As a company, we are evolving our incentive, the way we incentivize people to be able to offer this service, to be able to compensate their efforts on these services led interaction. So yes, they are compensated.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Philip.
Again, to ask a question, it is star one. Our next question comes from the line of Manyan Minyan from Frost & Sullivan. Please proceed, sir.
Hi. Thank you, David and Chris, for that presentation. Manoj from Frost & Sullivan. Actually, just wanted to understand if there is, you know, any major changes in your partnership and, you know, go-to-market strategy associated with services. You know, traditionally, your channels have played such an important role in, you know, delivering and front-ending the relationship with customers. Is there any major shift in that strategy? Are there any particular segments of the market that you're beginning to deal with more directly? Are there any, you know, a new set of partners that you're bringing into your ecosystem because, you know, they necessarily have some capabilities in providing business consulting services, and as a result, that is, you know, having a better pull through for your products and other solutions?
Manoj, thanks for the question. Let me answer it in two parts. So, well, first, Cisco is and will remain, as far as we can see, an organization that really leverages partners on our go-to-market strategy, and that will not change. So lots of these new services offers that we are talking about today are complementing what our partners traditionally do, which is, that's the way our go-to-market is. Having said that, there's a specific set of customers, and mainly on the high end, which are either some of the big service providers in the market or some strategic enterprise customers that, by nature, they have large IT departments, and those IT departments are very keen on having direct relationship with vendors. So in those cases, we tend to follow customer preference and have a direct relationship with some of those customers, but 80% of our or 90% of our support, the go-to-market strategy is through partners. It's in order to do that, right, we have launched a new flavor of services that we call collaborative services, which is a way of delivering this value add together with our partners and making sure that as we do that, we each leverage our core competences and our core skills. You know, at the end of the day, if you think on Cisco, right, even with the investments that we talked about, that is not enough to reach our customer base. So we really need to find a way and do that and kind of working together with our partners and leveraging their own skills and resources. And it has to do a lot with Cisco, with our partners leveraging Cisco's intellectual property. So if you think, for example, on the what I mentioned on the next generation services, what we do is we gather information from the customer, we use that information to correlate it to our own intellectual property, our own databases, our knowledge on the product. We come up with a diagnosis, and we send those diagnoses back to the partners so that the partners can act on those and provide more on-site services to the end users. So it's really kind of a triangle in with the customer, the partner, and the end user, and we need the three parts to be working successfully to be successful.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for the question, Manoj.
Your next question comes from the line of King Fong with Gardner. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you, David, for the excellent presentation. My question pertains to slide 6, in particular your partners. I believe some of them would be telecom carriers, you know, who are also, you know, offering some kind of managed services like applications performance monitoring and ensuring that applications and the network performs well. I'm just curious to find out further details as to Cisco's business relationship with them. Is it one of a carrier fronting you know, the services for Cisco, or is it one where Cisco fronts and pulls in the carrier? And also, how is the business model? You know, basically, you know, is it a revenue sharing model or something else?
Thanks, Nikon, for the question. So I think I understood it correctly. I'm going to answer it. If I miss any of the points, please feel free to further ask more details. So on slide number six, right, what we see is that with this model, we can enable some of our partners to move up the value chain of what they do. And the way we've been pitching the value add for them is that we think that, as you very properly said, that in the commercial marketplace, there will be a strong desire for kind of a managed services type of approach. We think that with the intelligence that we are providing to our partners through this next generation services model, they can very easily come up with a managed services proposal that can enable them to move in a very cost-effective way up that value chain. We don't intend to front that managed services type of offer. We intend our partners to do that. We intend to provide them the intellectual property to do that. And at this point in time, we're really not looking at revenue risk-sharing models as a go-to-market. So that will be responsibility of our partners. I didn't want to go into a little detail, but I'll just give you one more data point. We are tending to price this intellectual property in a very simple and flat way to all of our partners. So we will just charge most of them the same for what we provide, and will be up to them to find out the value add and come up with different pricing models to the end user. So we think that part of the differentiation that the partners will be doing is coming up with nice ways of packaging this in the go-to-market. We also think that part of the beauty of what we are providing is that this is a subscription model, which is new in the way we do services. Today, we send a contract to the end user, and after one year, the partner sends a contract to the end user, and after 1 year, it's up for renewal, and they need to call the end user to renew that. In this new generation services, it'll be more like what we use with mobile phones. So a customer will subscribe to it, and they will get a monthly invoice until the day in which they decide to cancel the contract. And since we have part of the beauty of this next generation model is the contract management side. So with the Pro, we know exactly how much equipment they have added to the network, and we're able to kind of on a subscription basis send them an invoice for the network configuration in a very accurate way.
Thank you, David.
Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Marisha Singh with Gartner. Please proceed.
Hi, this is Naresh Singh from Gartner. My question is about this engagement model. The same slide number six, it very much looks like your SmartNet services and other Cisco-branded support services in the past. And as far as your advisory and consulting services are concerned, we've always had IBSG, you know, in the past too. The only thing that I am seeing is that, of course, what you said about the subscription model, on a monthly the subscription model that you are planning out, and a rebranding of whatever was existing earlier. So, if there's anything else, you know, which is especially different from the past, can you just let me know?
Sure, Naresh. So, very, very good question. Thank you for that. So, we think it's significantly different, and I'll address it in two parts, just as kind of following the same structure of your question. So, first, on the kind of more the operate services, up until now, we never had a device that gave us intelligence on what was the network configuration of the end user, or what was the traffic patterns of that end user. So basically, the way we operated in the past is that the end user had a support contract either with a partner or with Cisco. Once they had a problem, they will either call the partner or Cisco, tell us that they had that problem, and then we will start asking them to perform some operations within their network, or at that point in time, we will do a remote logging into their network and try to identify the root cause of the problem. So that's the way SmartNet traditionally worked, or our partners led office traditionally worked. This is different because this means having a device there that is proactively monitoring the network and is able to detect potential problems before they occur. So you have the prevention side, also the contract management side, as you pretty well said in your question, is new. But basically, we proactively understand what are potential problems, and we pass that information to our partners so that our partners can come up with their recommendations. The recommendations could be some things like, you know, upgrading the speed of the links of the network, putting new equipment, migrating to a new software version, redesigning whatever. So it's proactive. It also kind of blurs the frontier between operate and optimize, because by being proactive, we can do both things together. So hopefully that gives you more of a deep perspective into the difference between SmartNet and what we're calling the next generation services models. To answer the second part of the question, as you said, right, in the past we had IBSG, which was kind of a way to advise customers on how to transform their business. What we have now is a richer and deeper organization that we call advisory services, that is able to really get engaged with the customer based on statements of work and help them with their business transformation and how that relates to a network transformation. We think that is fundamentally different than what we've been doing in the past, and as I said, I think answering one of the previous questions, that is the key nature of what we call services-led interactions, and we have already some successes to share. I think Chris shared some of them, and I also made reference to other parts in the industry. Does that answer your question, Naresh?
Yeah, David, to a certain extent. I just want to have a follow-up question on that device that you're talking about, which you put in a customer premises. Now, is that a different kind of device compared to the routers and switches that are normally bought with customers?
So,
the device that allows you to...
Yeah, I fully understand the question. We have two different approaches. So, for existing networks and existing equipment, if the customer wants this type of services, yes, we will put a probe. That probe can be either a software probe or it could be a hardware probe. And as we move forward with the evolution of this, most likely some of the equipment will have this capability embedded.
Okay. And also another question is, you know, what happens to the existing contracts with customers, the SmartNet services?
Well, as we say, right, this is the next generation of services. Right now, we're intending this more for the commercial user. So, short-term, new commercial customers that want this type of services, as we go into a full availability, will have access to them. If they have an existing SmartNet contract, obviously they could migrate that. And we are still some room to go until we have this fully available for all of our lines of customers, enterprise customers, and other type of customers. The day in which we have that, the customers will have the option to choose, right? If some customers are very comfortable having a probe into their network and having Cisco monitoring this proactively, other customers, for whatever reason, still are not at that stage and will want to kind of remain more with the SmartNet type of that engagement. That hopefully that answers the question, Naresh, and I'll be glad to have a follow-up discussion with you if you're willing to do so. We'll be quite willing to kind of go in much more depth on the one-on-one.
Yeah, David, the SmartNet services has been a very good service, you know, component for you in the past too. You know, almost like 20-30% of your revenue comes from services in the past as well. So that's already an existing business, a revenue channel for you already. So this SmartNet services seems to be, a lighter version of Smart. I mean, the services that you're talking about for commercial seems to me a lighter version of that.
Not necessarily a lighter version. We think it's the value proposition is different. The fact that they are proactive in nature is different than what we do with SmartNet, right? Also the fact that it's what we call network level support. So with SmartNet, you could choose to have certain parts of your network covered with SmartNet, other ones not. With this type of new services, it will be coverage on a network basis. So you either have, if as a customer you want to have this type of contract, you need to cover your network end to end. So it's a different value proposition. We think that especially in the commercial marketplace, this makes a lot of sense.
Okay, thank you. We can take this forward some other time.
Absolutely. We'll be very excited to do so, Naresh. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have time for one more question. Would you please press star 1? This concludes the Q&A portion of the conference.
Great. Thank you, operator. At this time, I want to thank our analyst audience for joining the call, and thank you again, Chris and David, for presenting to our audience. I would also like to thank Ming Liang Deong, who's on the call, our AR manager for APAC, in helping to produce this event. At this time, I also want to ask Chris or David to see if they have any closing remarks to our audience. David?
Thank you, Amy. Well, first, I just want to thank everyone for taking the time on dialing in and understanding a little bit more of our services strategy and our plans moving forward. I would also like to invite any of the attendees to reach out if you want more detailed information on any of the topics that we covered. We're quite conscious that we couldn't go into depth into any of them with the limitations in time, but hopefully we've been able to provide you with kind of a high-level overview on what are the areas of innovation that we are going through as a services organization and how we get the market. Thanks again.
Chris, do you have any closing remarks?
No, I think well said, David. I think we certainly appreciate the time that you've taken to spend the last hour with us. We hope it was informative and look forward to future opportunities where we can interact with you and help you understand where we're going with our direction and the importance that Cisco Services has in the marketplace.
Great. If anyone has any follow-up questions, please contact Min Leong. Her contact information is in the slide deck toward the end of the deck itself. So lastly, I wanted to note that we have just sent out a short survey to all of our analyst audience, and I wish to thank you in advance for providing your candid feedback. We would love to hear from you to help us to continue to evolve and improve our speaker series program. With that, I would like to wish all a great day. And operator, would you please close the call at this time?
Yes. Thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes the presentation. You may now disconnect.